You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Tuesday, August 30th, 2022. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Jackson, Mississippi, a city of 180,000 people, said no drinking water for almost a month and now has virtually no running water for drinking or for any other use for that matter. Meanwhile, Donald Trump looking to delay the Department of Justice investigation by seeking a special master to look over documents that the government has already looked over and would ultimately, if found not to be pertinent to the investigation, would go back to the government.
And the Trump appointee is overseeing that request, Judge.
It's just a waste of time. However, apparently, new reporting that Donald Trump had been bragging he had intel on Macron's sex life.
Total teacher's pet, yeah, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Talk about his,
Judge rules that Brian Kemp must testify to a Georgia grand jury about Trump's election interference. Lindsey Graham still trying to wiggle out of testifying. Tony Ornato, top Secret Service official, who was in the room and talking about Trump lunging for the steering wheel of the presidential car, wanting to go to the Capitol on January 6th, unexpectedly quits. Presumably to avoid further testifying to the January 6th committee. Blake Masters running for the Hills, I mean, digitally speaking, but the Hills keep returning. The Hills run away from him. I'm not sure what the metaphor is. Senate raises races looking increasingly favorable for Democrats, as well as the House races. Meanwhile, California moves two big pieces of legislation on housing and labor, and another on a bill protecting fast food workers. Ukraine announces offensive operations in southern Ukraine. Mukhtar al-Sadr calls for his supporters to stand down as clashes erupt in Baghdad. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for joining us. I realized I forgot to get my little bottle of... Will you grab it for me? It's in the... excuse me. It's in the refrigerator. An auspicious start to the program today. Joining me, as always, Emma Vigeland. Hello, Emma.
Hello, Sam. So what, you're out of... Your liquid IV. Yeah, I forgot to refill.
I'm not out of it. I just forgot to take it. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Bradley. Producer extraordinaire.
Yeah, there he is.
It is Newsday Tuesday.
Newsday Tuesday, ladies and gentlemen. Not the biggest of Newsdays, but some important stuff to talk about. And certainly a good time to take a look at what's happening in these Senate races around the country. Because it is, it's certainly a surprise from where I would have thought we would have been 6-7 months ago. And, so much of this is going to turn on turnout, but we'll get to that. I mean, that seems like an obvious thing to say, but the turnout is more in doubt now, I think, than it was 6 months ago because of January 6th. But I think even more so because of abortion. And I would add, there's a sort of a cycle with Republicans where they feel their oats, and then they put up candidates who are lunatics. And it's not a clinical term. That is just relative to where the rest of normal Americans are on the issues of the day. And when they, well, we'll get into this a little bit later, because I want to just go with this. In fact, this is an example of this. And that being, and the this being that, like, look, there's a reason why Republicans have spent the past couple of years talking about things like Dr. Seuss, not being, you know, the people who produce or publish Dr. Seuss decide to take 2 or 3 or 6 or 7 or 50. What difference does it make? Titles out of circulation. They're talking about, you know, speech codes at Oberlin, they are talking about, the idea of high school trans athletes somehow, you know, ruining high school sports. And the fact of the matter is, these are not concerns for normal people. And by normal, I mean like 60% of the population in this country. People could take issue with my calling them normal, but I also think that they're just normal. I think largely speaking, people are not obsessed at the idea of what genitalia certain, you know, high school athletes have, or putting even that aside, they're not terribly concerned when there's one trans athlete in entire, you know, state's worth of high school sports. They're not going to obsess over it.
Yeah, or think it's the thing that politicians should be emphasizing.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying. It's like, you know, it's an interesting, it might be an interesting topic to have, you know, you had a bar, like, what's the question? I don't, you know, the answer, I could, reasonable people could disagree about it, but in terms of like getting, you know, this is the most important question facing the country is absurd. And the same too with things like Dr. Seuss, and I could come
potato
up
Potato Head,
Alex Jones,
and Potato Head, or you know, I mean, it goes exactly Potato Head, or whatever the culture war du jour that they're fighting.
Drag brunches, which the Proud Boys are protesting outside of in Texas over over the weekend.
But what people do care about are material things that impact them. And so inflation, or at least I should say, you know, inflation in the broadest sense of the word, a lot of things are expensive. Gas is expensive. Now, the fact of the matter is that the president really, or the Senate really doesn't have the ability to do anything other than to encourage, and how hard they encourage, you know, a transitioning to green energy. But another thing is student debt. 45 million people in this country, 45 million adults out of like 280 million adults have student debt. But if you add in like their parents or their kids or their friends, the number of Americans who know people with student debt is enormous. It could be all of them. I don't know. 250 million adults, whatever. And the idea that all of these people are horrible people for having student debt just doesn't track with normal Americans. It simply doesn't.
Or that they are some caricature of like a lazy college student who's only smoking pot. And I mean, these people don't exist anymore, because the person who has student debt who's being caricaturized is your friend.
Right.
Kid.
Right.
And your cousin.
It's just a reminder. And so they don't know how to handle these type of issues. And we've played yesterday, I can't remember what, Ted Cruz saying that you're a slacker barista at a Starbucks or something. And therefore, I don't know what the point is, that like you shouldn't have gone to college, or you're wasting your college, which I think is actually an even better argument for relieving student debt, because our economy is so whack that, you know, a college degree doesn't necessarily put you in a decent a place financially.
Yeah. And I just want to say real quickly, people make like the gender and ethnic studies jokes, but only like 7,000 people graduate with those sorts of degrees any year. Business, if you want to talk about the debt, that it, probably business majors. Probably,
without a doubt.
Yeah.
Without a doubt.
People who are trying to go into law or medicine, where you have to go to graduate school for a long period of time.
The vast majority of it is actually, I think there's a huge percentage of people who don't actually graduate because they can't afford it, even with the loans. I don't know if that's like 30%, but it's pretty close. But a lot of these colleges are two-year colleges. A lot of these colleges are for-profit colleges, particularly, and we've spoken to, I think, multiple people we've talked to about this dynamic. Black women in particular who are in the private sector, they are trying to move up in their jobs. They are running up against the idea that they don't have a college degree or a graduate degree, and they go back and they get their degrees, and then they find out, like, maybe that wasn't the only reason why I wasn't moving up.
For-profit colleges are exploiting that.
Without a doubt.
They are exploiting the ramifications of systemic racism and discrimination for profit. It is a disgusting enterprise.
Right. And it's also, you know, these are, a lot of these people are first-time college goers. And it is, there's an exploitation not just of the immediate circumstances of these people, but also generations that diminished intergenerational wealth, generations that diminished opportunities to build an awareness and a perspective on college, right? You're the first person in your family that goes to college. You don't have a sense necessarily of other than what you've, you know, read and what the conventional wisdom is as to, you know, what this is going to mean for you career-wise. You know, frankly, a decent part of colleges in terms of where the careers are, it's not just the qualifications that you have, but also the social circles it puts you in.
Absolutely.
And if you don't have that second part in terms of the networking, you're not necessarily getting that from an online degree or from a for-profit college. Or if you're going, you know, a night school, it's not the same. It's not the same dynamic. Nobody's been able to really sort of tease this out as to all the factors that add to you making more money going forward. And we should also say that, broadly speaking, we should also want a more informed and educated citizenry so they're better citizens.
We want
not
that.
Not just workers. Well, yeah. Yes. And in fact, that, and you read that from The Intercept the other day, that story about Reagan's, I think it was the Commerce Secretary or whoever it was, that had basically said, we don't want an educated population. That's problematic for us. And in fact, that's also, and Reagan understood this too, because you start to see, you know, what was happening at these colleges in the 60s. But there are some who sort of understand this dynamic and don't realize how offensive it is. I give you Sean Hannity. Last week, you played a clip of Sean Hannity talking about what did he say last week specifically?
So is this part of his comments are included here, Bradley, or is that true?
No, this is just his response.
Okay.
But, okay. Yeah. So last week, Sean Hannity went on his radio show, I think as the news was breaking or right after, and he talked about how this was all socialism and Green New Deal politics to that effect. But what he really ended up saying, I'm trying to find the exact quote here, but what he ended up saying was that some of my employees might benefit from this, and that is wrong. That is socialism. And so it was him admitting out loud in the moment that he doesn't want good things for his employees. He wants more coercive power over them in the form of crushing debt. So that allows someone like Sean Hannity and other bosses to drive down wages. It also allows them to keep certain employees more hostage to their current situation.
Of course.
So they don't get they can't rise go. Up
they
too
need
much.
The money
right.
too much.
They're compelled.
They need the money. If they're having to pay an extra $300 a month in student loan servicing, $200 a month, $100 a month, that just means that, A, like, they don't have the ability to quit a job where their boss is a dick. And
the quote was, we have a lot of young people that work on my TV show. They're not making $125,000, which is the cutoff for receiving this relief. They're now eligible to get, in some cases, up to $20,000, and in other cases, $10,000. This is new Green Deal radical socialism.
So Hannity got a lot of pushback.
He makes $45 million a year.
He doesn't pay his producers six figures. I mean, okay.
Well, and his producers that,
and that here. $45 million is what he gets from his TV show and his radio. Because he That's also a good is question. A slumlord too, as far as I know. Like he bought a lot of distressed properties and is got, you know.
25 is from Fox News.
Okay. Well, and God knows how many he makes with all his endorsements and whatnot. But so here he is having to backtrack a little bit, but his producers, you know, I wonder how they joke about this in the office. But here is, well, look at this exchange.
I don't know if you noticed the mob, the media mistook some words that I said about this. I was talking about myself and how when I got out of, you know, when I ran out of money and I got out of college because I didn't have any money to continue, that I still had to pay off my debt at a time where I was living paycheck to paycheck. And I ended up writing a check, $58.05 every month to Jamaica Savings Bank. And I paid off my loan and it wasn't easy to do. This basically, if you have a $125,000 income level limit, there's nobody that gets out of school that is, and unless you went to law school or you have some very specific skill, is going to make that kind of money. And so everybody starts out, but they also cap it at 5% of what your income is, which is pretty low for somebody starting out. Although I would advise people to get rid of their debt as quickly as they can. That's just my own humble advice. Don't take my, I'm not a financial advisor. Do what your own financial advisors tell you to do.
So what was the problem? The
yeah. fact
that pause it for 1 second. I mean, just leave, first of all, how like he's meandering here. First of all, if he's going to cite his own loan, I want to know what the amount was. I want to know what the interest was. He's paying $58 a month for, you know, 2 years. You have people who have been tied up in debt for decades, decades. Interest rates that are just exponentially soaking people for money. And the idea that like 5% income is a little bit too low, you should be servicing this debt.
You need to budget. You need to budget. The kids just need to budget. They need to look at a spreadsheet. And if they're unable to do so, they need to hire a financial advisor who will tell them what to do.
I want more details about his thing. But he's sitting here meandering around. He's not unclear. He's so off back-footed here.
Yeah. I like that the idea that someone who's paying the minimum on their loans, like right after college, also has a financial advisor. I mean, maybe right. I'm just behind on this.
You should really pick it up a little bit.
Yeah.
Continue.
That is, and unless you went to law school or you have some very specific skill, is going to make that kind of money. And so everybody starts out, but they also cap it at 5% of what your income is, which is pretty low for somebody starting out. Although I would advise people to get rid of their debt as quickly as they can. That's just my own humble advice.
Okay. Don't say,
I'm not a financial advisor. Do what your own financial advisors tell you to do.
So what was the problem? The fact that you could commiserate?
Oh, the fact was Hannity wants his own, doesn't even want his own employees to get free college tuition or
no, you don't. You want us to believe in the American way, which is capitalism and freedom. And quite frankly, I don't even know what a college education is worth these days, considering what they're teaching our kids. So as far as I'm concerned, a trade might be a much better path at this point.
Well, it's capped at 5%. What I'm saying is that every other person.
Pause it. This is like they're having two separate conversations. Like this is clearly one of those moments. And look, you know, I'm in the same business. where you said, look, I'm going to be talking about this again, you know, chime in. And she's going to say, well, I think it's about the American way. And you go, oh, yeah, say that. But he's like trying to go back to the 5% thing there. What freedom? What freedom is infringed by having $10,000 or $20,000 worth of debt forgiven? It's the opposite.
The freedom
debt literally is. It's almost like I'm in debt to you. I'm in servitude to you.
Yes, yeah,
I literally. Am, in fact, in some way, entrapped by you. That's what literally it is.
Yeah.
It's like the language.
Debt is
actually,
like a 21st century indentured servitude a degree.
Not even 21st century. Look, this is what debt is. You have a restriction on your freedom. $10,000 gives you a little bit more freedom. If it gets rid of your debt, it gives you a little bit more freedom. If it gets rid of a part of your debt, it gives you a little bit of freedom. I mean, if you're going to talk about freedom and liberty, having less debt is literally that.
Yeah. I mean, from another perspective, freedom is collecting interest on humanity's need to educate itself. So.
Exactly. Well, that's the capitalism. I mean, it is. But then he goes back to the 5%. Go back a little bit. This is
also
very odd.
I thought she was going to be one of the producers who got the student loan forgiveness, but she sounds as out of touch as Hannity. So I'm not sure.
This is a producer named Linda McLaughlin. I imagine she's. I mean, if she's on air, I think she's probably not like a line or you know.
This is we need some cover here.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
We've played Hannity clips from his radio program before. Have we ever heard his producer weigh in?
No.
Occasionally.
I hadn't, but my guess is that he was more than willing to have his producer weigh in on this topic after throwing.
When he looks at his ratings and realizes that there's no women listening to him. He has his, tries to make it seem like, let's do a Sam and Diane thing from Cheers. Go ahead, continue.
You want us to believe in the American way, which is capitalism and freedom. And quite frankly, I don't even know what a college education is worth these days, considering what they're teaching our kids. So as far as I'm concerned, a trade might be a much better path.
Incidentally, if you went to a higher education trade place, they would also relieve your debt.
Percent. What I'm saying is that every other person that came before them that took out student loan debt, in other words, freely entered into an agreement to pay it back, should not expect others to pay off their debt.
Exactly and right.
Pause it. I was raised by a bankruptcy attorney. There is absolutely no other situation in this country where there is no avenue to relieve your debt, except for student debt in this country. Donald Trump went bankrupt multiple times. I'm sure Hannity got PPP. That loan was forgiven. This happens all the time, every day. I don't know how many bankruptcies are declared every day. Chapter 7s, Chapter 11s, personal bankruptcies, corporate bankruptcies. That means that your debt gets renegotiated. You get protection from the court to renegotiate your debt. Your creditors will not be made whole unless you liquidate everything. And even then, generally they're not, because if they could be, it wouldn't be much of an issue. So it is completely the American way to have debt reduced. It's really just a question of who gets that debt reduction.
And just real quickly, what's also the American way is the false notion that this is some sort of zero sum freedom game where he says that you're going to be paying for debt relief. No one's paying for it. Nobody. The person that is the entity that is choosing not to seek repayment is the federal government. And there's no trade off in terms of taxation or anything like that for anyone else.
Continue.
Much better path at this point.
Well, it's capped at 5%. What I'm saying is that every other person that came before them that took out student loan debt, in other words, freely entered into an agreement to pay it back, should not expect others to pay off their debt.
Exactly right.
That's all there is to it. And I'm speaking from my own experience at a time in my life when I had no money and was living paycheck to paycheck, didn't have a safety net of any kind. There was no government program ready to help me out if I wasn't able to pay back my student loan debt. And I paid it back. And in the end, I actually think it builds character.
Oh.
In the end, I think if you make it a deal, you make an agreement, it's like, oh, pay off my car, pay off my mortgage. You know, where does this stop?
Where does it end? Exactly right. And I think and we're seeing that right now.
And why should people that paid off their debt be forced to pay off other people's debt?
That guy from last week where we were playing that sound from a couple of years ago where he talked to Senator Warren and he said,
I remember that. That was completely set up. That was completely set up. I remember that during the campaign. A complete setup.
Yeah, he went up to her and said, if I already paid mine off, will you?
Do you hear people going around and whining about the fact that other people are going bankrupt, that they get debt protection there? Were people bitching about the PPP loans being forgiven?
No, yeah, they should call his buddy Trump and see what he thinks about all those bankrupts.
What if you closed your business in 2019? Because you didn't have revenue. And then all of a sudden, people are getting payments for their workers. 2020. Yeah.
No, I love to build character while others are accruing interest.
Exactly.
And like, Hannity, bro, you had to leave college. Your education suffered because of the system, like by his own admission. It would have been better if you were able to get that education instead of like having to leave and still pay off that.
You might all be
in a better position.
I will say this. Had he gotten that education, he may not have had this career.
It's the butterfly effect.
It really hurt us here.
God, he just triggers me so much as one of those old like men that talk down to women
horrible.
Like that, and just have, like it builds character. I mean, I've interacted with these douchebags many days.
Well, speaking of it being American to be in debt. It also reminded me of this quote from George W. Bush back in 2005 when he was trying to raid the Social Security Trust Fund. We only have audio for it. I think you can find it on C-SPAN, but we couldn't find the video clip quick enough, where a woman got up in the audience and was talking about the hardship she's going through, and he didn't quite get it.
There's a certain comfort to know that the promises made will be kept by the government. You don't have to worry.
That's good, because I work three jobs and I feel like I contribute.
You work three jobs?
Three jobs, yes.
Uniquely American, isn't it? I mean, that is fantastic that you're doing that.
Thank you.
That is fantastic.
Get any sleep?
Yeah.
There it is.
Yeah. Some may call it Stockholm Syndrome. I call it loving your captor. I mean, country.
Well, I mean, I think she was, he just didn't pick up on it. Like she was talking about, he was in there talking about he was going to raid the Social Security Trust Fund.
Right. Yeah.
He was basically going into file cabinets and saying like, all there's here is an IOU, which was actually a treasury note, which America has never defaulted on in its history of the country. But the idea that it's uniquely American for someone to work three jobs would, for most normal human beings, make us think about what's going on in America that might not be very good.
Yeah, you know what George Bush thinks? Mission accomplished.
Mission accomplished. All right, a couple of words from our sponsors today. Oh, with all this talk about the office, politics and stuff like that, mm-hmm. and student loans. And I have decided that I'm going by a new moniker on the show from now on, or at least around the office, not so much on the show, but around the office. And that is Lord Sam Cedar, ladies and gentlemen. One of our sponsors today, Established Titles. It's a established title, a project based on a historic Scottish custom where landowners are referred to as lairds or lords and ladies in English. Established Titles allows you to ceremonially buy as little as 1 square foot of dedicated land in Eddleston, Scotland. So you can call yourself a lord or lady. I mean, you could do that, I guess, if you wanted to anyways, but you wouldn't get this black.
You wouldn't be backed up by property.
Would be backed up by being a landowner. You get an official certificate with a crest, which features your unique plot number. This allows you to see exactly where your plot is located. Mine is, I can't even read that. It is 287912.
Oh.
This. Very proud of it.
My lord.
This. Thank you. Thank you. Here's the best part. Established Titles plants one tree with every order. And Established Titles does great work all over the world with environmental organizations like One Tree Planted and Trees for the Future. So Established Titles is a fun novelty gift, but you're also helping preserve the picturesque woodlands and biodiversity of Scotland, supporting global reforestation efforts. It makes a great last-minute gift. They even have couple packs that come with adjoining plots of land. So you, like Lord and Lady, can both have 2 square feet of property. The first 200 people purchasing a title pack using my link will effectively be next to my plot. It's just a few minutes walking distance. So if you ever make it to Eddleston, Scotland, you could check out my plot. I would appreciate some feedback as to how it's going there. Established Titles now running a great Labor Day sale. Plus, if you use the code Majority, you get an additional 10% off. Go to establishedtitles.com/majority. Use the code Majority to get your gifts now and help support our show. That's establishedtitles.com/majority. Coupon code Majority saves you 10%. I've got a Lord and a Lady plaque. Just depending on my mood. Yeah, why not? One of our other sponsors today, ZBiotics. I've talked about ZBiotics. I've taken ZBiotics. It is a probiotic drink that breaks down the byproduct of alcohol, which, contrary to your misconception, and or I should say mine, is not about dehydration, although you do get dehydrated and you don't feel good when that. But it's also this enzyme which gives you rough morning after you're drinking. So you drink a bottle of ZBiotics before you have your first drink of alcohol. One bottle is all you need. It's about this big. I don't know how many, like 2 ounces maybe? Yeah. I don't know exactly, but it's about this big. It's not much. And it doesn't matter whether you're going to have one drink or multiple drinks. You drink responsibly. You pace yourself. You get a good night's sleep. And then you, this is what happens. You enjoy your next day. You feel refreshed. You're ready to make the most of it. You're going to work out. You no excuses. I've actually started to try and work out, and this has helped.
Ooh.
It was occasionally I like to go over, have a glass of bourbon or rye, my neighbor, and I don't want to feel like crap the next morning. ZBiotics, like I say, produces an enzyme. It's like the one your liver uses. It breaks down this byproduct, and ZBiotics is the first genetically engineered probiotic. It is created by altering the DNA of a natural probiotic bacteria we eat all the time. ZBiotics is not vitamins. It is not plant extracts. It is not no off-the-shelf ingredients. ZBiotics has been rigorously tested and is FDA compliant for safety. If you're the kind of person who enjoys drinks with friends or you want to unwind at the end of the day, you got a full day planned tomorrow, ZBiotics is perfect for you. It doesn't matter what you want your next day to be, productive, fun, healthy, whatever, you're going to feel better. Get 15% off your first order of ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic. Go to ZBiotics.com/majority. Use the code majority. That's the letter Z, Biotics, BIOTICS.com/majority. Coupon code majority at checkout saves you 15%. And as always, the link is in the YouTube and podcast description. And a reminder. This show relies on your support. If you want the free show free of commercials, become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. You will help the show survive and thrive. Quickly, let's just touch on this. We've told you the story about Jackson, Mississippi, 180,000 people there. There's no water. This is a function of the flooding, but it is also something they've been aware of as a problem. And I think Emma's going to be doing an interview in the next couple of days with
hopefully
with a reporter from there. We're working on that. Another story that you should keep your eye on, Tony Ornato. He was one of two Secret Service men, agents, who Cassidy Hutchinson, who was Mark Meadows' right-hand woman in the administration, testified that they had told her the story. Ornato and Engel, these two Secret Service agents, told the story about how Trump tried to grab the steering wheel and go to the Capitol. Then, subsequent to that, there were leaks from the Secret Service saying that she's a liar, we'll testify. And then we can't necessarily testify.
Yeah, we're still waiting on that.
And Ornato, apparently, he spoke to the January 6th commission, but not about this. They spoke to him about Pence, because they didn't hear this part from Cassidy at that time. So they want to bring him back. And the DOJ has been trying to interview him. He's been putting it off since June. He went on vacation last week, and he comes back the next day, and he quits. Now, he's supposedly having to have this interview tomorrow. It's unclear whether he's going to show up. My bet? Not going to show up. Because the subpoena, their ability to subpoena him as a government worker is stronger than it is if he's a private citizen. The DOJ can still ultimately subpoena him, but January 6th Commission cannot. Doesn't have the same authority as far as I know. So we'll see how this plays out, but seems odd.
Seems odd. I want to credit that it was Ken Klippenstein who broke the story for The Intercept, which is a pretty big scoop. So it's essentially going to be a lot harder. Can the January 6th committee compel him? Yes, they've got to be able to, but they have to go through more hoops because he's a private citizen.
It's a lot tougher.
Right.
A lot tougher.
Yeah.
Ultimately they could. But
Ornato could just volunteer, right? I mean, hey, they have nothing to hide, despite deleting and scrubbing one's text messages from a very specific 48-hour period ahead of this investigation, and then saying it was just routine.
Coincidence. So jaded.
Just spring cleaning, okay.
Yeah, just wanted to get things out of the way. All right, let's talk about what's going on in California. They're really moving some legislation out of there, which is looking impressive, at least from afar. But as far as I can tell, all the right people are excited about what's happening there legislatively. Two big pieces. Where is my other now notes?
Here I'll say that I was a little bit worried that some of these pieces of legislation would get killed by Newsom, because a few weeks ago he killed that safe injection site a bill.
That's still possible.
Yeah.
It is still possible that he may do that. We'll see. I think this is going to be a little bit trickier for him. There are there's a couple of bills. One is Assembly Bill 257. It's the Fast Food Recovery Act. It creates a fast food council that will establish standards for wages, working hours, and conditions. It has it's 10 seats. Four seats that are set aside for franchises and franchisees, franchisors and franchisees. I own a McDonald's. I'm there, and a corporate representative is there. Four seats for labor representatives, and then two representatives from the Department of Industrial Relations and the Governor's Office of Business and Economic Development. Those are gubernatorial appointees. Those can go either way, but at least you're going to have four people on there who are going to be fighting for labor there. And the only restriction, it's interesting, there was an amendment that says that they cannot raise the minimum wage higher than $22 an hour without legislative action. But it does mean that they could go, and that's just in 2023. So after that, it could go further. It establishes that legislators will have sufficient time to review and potentially block any standards set by the council. And the council has a sunset of 6 years, allowing the lawmakers to evaluate its effectiveness. all of the right people are upset about this and claiming that it's going to destroy the fast food business. A study by UCLA and UC Berkeley, is according to the Los Angeles Times, found that almost 2/3 of fast food workers have experienced wage theft. More than half have faced health and safety hazards on the job. Of the workers who raised concern with their employers, about a third reported that their employer did nothing to resolve the issue, while a quarter of them experienced retaliation. So this is certainly needed, and we'll see. I mean, it's conceivable that Newsom could veto this, but I doubt it. It was heavily negotiated. There is, and incidentally, there are about 700,000 fast food workers in California. 700,000. This is, I mean, to see industry-wide organizing and labor power, it's not exactly, you know, it is really crucial. I mean, this is the path to getting real labor power, is when it becomes sort of like industry-wide as opposed to shop-wide.
And that was the reason that it was Prop 22, right? That was the, or was it, what was the proposition?
21, for, I think, 21? In terms of like gig workers.
Right. I think that was the reason that Uber and other rideshare companies broke records in terms of their amount of money spent on lobbying for that. Because when you atomize workers as gig workers, you're a lot more likely to be able to get away with unfair labor practices and wage theft than you would be when there's an organized labor force behind it. And this is like, there's a dichotomy between how Uber drivers are currently being compensated and what could happen with these fast food workers in California.
Yep. Meanwhile, there's another bill that is up that is a couple of like it and I'm still sort of like trying to assess this. And I don't know if this was a separate piece of this legislation, but a couple of things to deal with housing. One, California eliminated minimum parking requirements for new housing projects within a half a mile of public transit stops statewide. So this is huge, because what it does, one of the inhibitions to building new housing in California and new apartment buildings is that there have been parking requirements. They have eliminated this, like I said, for if you're within a half mile of public transit stops, which there's plenty of that, particularly in LA now. And so this is going to allow for a lot more building of apartments, and there's a dire housing shortage out in California. On top of which, there is a deal between housing advocates and labor unions. California lawmakers on Monday, according to the LA Times, approved two bills that would guarantee livable wages on projects to convert underutilized commercial buildings into housing. So in these sort of like warehouse districts, it's going to, again, this is going to incentivize and expedite housing construction in these commercial corridors that were usually reserved for big box stores or office buildings close to city services. And this is going to prevent urban sprawl. It's going to help in terms of less car traffic. It's going to make more walkable cities. I mean, this is good stuff. The assembly's version includes strict environmental requirements in an effort to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and mandates that a good portion of units be reserved for low-income residents. The Senate legislation is even bolder, is a bolder labor bill that would increase housing for moderate earners. Developers would therefore have the choice between more stringent labor standards and training criteria for workers or additional affordable housing requirements when planning their projects. So I don't know. It seems like, I'm not sure exactly how that trade-off happens, but it seems like both labor and affordable housing advocates are happy with this. So that's good news out of California. You know, this is what's going to have to happen going forward in this country. New York and California are going to have to lead the way on these things.
On housing,
on labor standards, at least, you know,
I know Chipotle had a big fine, $20 million because of the New York Fair Work Week law, I think. So a similar thing in New York.
Yep. Lastly, let's talk about just we got a couple minutes left. Let's talk about some of these Senate races. The Republicans have a real problem because they have no message. And within the past, like, 2 months, all of a sudden, Democrats have a whole host of messages, ranging from abortion, ranging from the danger that the Republican Party represents for in terms of democracy. And, you know, I think there's in my most jaded moments, I'm like, whatever. But there are some real problems here. I mean, there are across the country elections and appointments of basically Trumpistas who, if they have another opportunity, they will throw an election. There's also reports about what the Republicans are going to do to civil service jobs in our government. I mean, they represent a real, I think, existential threat to the democratic nature. We have problems with our democracy, but this is the way to fix them is not to go towards authoritarian rule. And like, when you think about it, it's not hard to imagine this country not caring. I mean, it's not hard to imagine that people who are not paying attention to this stuff, not caring at all. And even people who are. And over the past couple of months, that has impacted, I think, you know, some Republican voters. Abortion has activated people who wouldn't otherwise, who were sort of like sick of politics. And the student debt relief, you've even got Ted Cruz going like, this is going to get some of the young people out to vote.
Republicans are whining that it's a bribe, as if the tax cuts that they give for the wealthy and corporations don't constitute the exact definition of, like, well, I guess the bribe comes in the form of campaign donations and then they deliver. So it's maybe a bit in the reverse. But it's kind of the perfect, and not perfect, I wish Biden went further on student debt and canceled it all, frankly. But in terms of delivering for people and then also engaging in negative partisanship, where now it's not ultra MAGA anymore. They're calling them MAGA Republicans.
The administration is.
Biden
is good.
And Biden said that these new Republicans are semi-fascist. From a messaging perspective, that's helpful. And I think the January 6th committee and the abortion fallout, the fact that this is being felt immediately by a third of women in this country who are unable to access an abortion now, plus paired with actual delivering for people on student debt and even the win with the Inflation Reduction Act, It's a way better situation than when we were in electorally 2 months ago.
And one of the big issues, like we say, is abortion. And this is really, really hurting a couple of the candidates right now. We'll get to Blake Masters in a minute. But here is a Colorado Senate candidate, Joe O'Dea. He's running against Michael Bennett in Colorado. And O'Dea is running away from what has been a staple of Republican party politics for decades, because they realize now, like, oh, women don't like to have their bodily sovereignty taken away. Folks who can get pregnant don't like to have their bodily autonomy taken away. And particularly where the Democrats have been smart about sort of phrasing this as a loss of liberty and government overreach, state government, still government to you neo-Confederate libertarians out there. And here is O'Dea.
Your race was a very interesting one to watch. You beat a candidate who was more of a Trump supporter. You are sort of running in a more moderate lane, and yet your opponent, the current senator, Michael Bennett, is looking to sort of peg you that way a little bit more. Here's an example in an ad that dropped on Friday. Watch this.
It makes the race for Senate even more important. Michael Bennett has always fought to protect a woman's right to make her own health care decisions. But Joe O'Day opposes the law protecting abortion access in Colorado.
So we wanted to give you a chance to respond to that, because clearly the Roe v. Wade decision is becoming a factor in races all across the country. We're going to see a lot of ads like that. Are they accurately portraying your view on this, sir?
Oh, that ad's dishonest. It's at best. I came out early on in this election and said that I supported a woman's rights early on in the pregnancy and even later on, with mitigating circumstances. So I've been very vocal about that.
Mitigating circumstances.
Ran my primary on that, and we ended up winning. We fought back $10 million worth of Schumer's money during the primary. They tried to paint my opponent, who they wanted to run against, as the most conservative, pushing me to the middle here in Colorado. I'm very satisfied with where our campaign is. We're excited. We built a huge tent here in Colorado, and we're going to take our message forward. It's resonating with working Americans, and we're going to win in November. I'm confident.
So there it is, O'Day, right there. You know, now it's no longer like I'm a pro-life. It's I'm against abortion with mitigating experience. Mitigating situations.
Yeah.
And some mitigations.
I know we're going to get to Blake Masters, but what his change on his website from what it was, where he wanted a fetal personhood law.
Well, let's pop this up. This is a story about it.
We covered it last week, but
he's the best part of this is, so Blake Masters, 100% pro-life, anti-abortion last month. This month, not so much. He scrubbed that, but apparently it also scrubbed all sorts of other things from his website, saying that the election was stolen, et cetera, et cetera. And the funniest part about this is that he had asked, before he started running, he had asked the Wayback Machine to erase his website. So basically what the Wayback Machine is, if you don't know what it is, it's the web archive, essentially. It crawls across all websites at various times over the course of a year and records it. You can see like pictures of it. It doesn't have every single day, but it will check like we did it here, we did it there, based upon changes, and you can request to have it your stuff erased if there's stuff that you don't want to be out there. And Blake Masters did this, but what the Wayback Machine taketh away can also bringeth backeth, as it goes. So on August 1st, the day before the Republican primary, the day before he won the Republican primary, Blake Masters' website said that Democrats were trying to import a new electorate in the form of immigrants.
It's subtle.
Yes.
Replace us, yeah.
Trying to replace us, indeed. He was saying that the election was stolen. He had support of a federal personhood law, et cetera, et cetera. And this is great. The Masters website was removed from the web archive in the Internet Archive Wayback Machine. I think if you go wayback.org, you can check this stuff out. And this is what they had to say. Any person can request their content be removed from the Wayback Machine, and Internet users flagged its removal on Friday following an NBC's report. The removal sparked cries that Masters was trying to hide changes to his campaign website. The exclusion of this page was actually requested in 2018 before he was a candidate. Quote, Blake Masters sent us a request to exclude BlakeMasters.com from the Wayback Machine in 2018, well prior to his campaign, the spokesman said. We were not aware he would become a candidate for public office and excluded the site. We have presently re-enabled access to archives of the site from the time period after Masters' campaign became public. So anything that he still had up there while he was campaigning is now back up. And this is a problem for Masters. It's a problem for all the Republicans. And if you just take a look at the polling, it's happening across the country. We have half a dozen or so races that the Senate hinges upon, a little more. We'll go through them. In Colorado, we just heard from Joe O'Day.
Can you say on O'Day, like, he can say what he wants about, you know, how moderate he actually is on abortion. He would have supported Kavanaugh, Gorsuch, and Barrett still. So
without a doubt.
And with Masters, now he's replaced on his website this personhood law, fetal personhood law, with a claim that he just doesn't support late-term abortions, which is just another way for Republicans to hide the reality of what they're advocating for. Late-term abortions are for when the life of the mother is in danger or the child is non-viable. And you have to support abortion access in general so that the medical professionals and the women involved and the people who can get pregnant can make these determinations on a case-by-case basis. Just having that exemption to ban it is just a way to appeal to the same crowd.
Right.
It's not viable at all, no pun intended.
Right. This is their backup position, as it were. And so O'Day, there's a reason why he's backing up on abortion, and that is because the most recent poll, 47.4% Michael Bennett, 41.6% Joe O'Day. The Libertarian taking 5 percentage points there. Undecided is only 4.5%. So good work, Libertarians in Colorado. Colorado, I think, one of those states where a Libertarian perspective has always been a little bit overappreciated. Another race that's going to be very tricky for Republicans is Wisconsin. And Chuck Schumer is planning to hold a vote on that. It is already passed in the House. Statutory protection for marriage equality for gay people. And because we've now seen that the Supreme Court does not believe in the idea of settled law, if it can remove a 50-year right from Americans, it can certainly remove a right that was established 9 years ago for Americans. And so the House has passed this bill. The Senate's going to vote for it. Ron Johnson at first said, like, this is unnecessary. There's no reason to vote on this, but I'll vote for it. Why not? And then he found out why not, because the Republican Party still contains a sizable portion of its base that are theocrats and do not want marriage equality. And so he's had to back out of that, and he's worried about about taking that vote one way or another. And he should be. Mandela Barnes, who has been the lieutenant governor under Evers, 49.4%. Ron Johnson, 47.1%.
Oof. That's huge, because if Democrats are able to pick up that seat in Wisconsin and all things continue to go well in Pennsylvania with Fetterman versus Dr. Oz, that's the kind of gains that, you know, are necessary to make Joe Manchin a little less powerful, make Kirsten Sinema a little less powerful.
I mean, look, the bottom line is this. If they hold all the other seats, and they pick up, Democrats pick up Pennsylvania and pick up Wisconsin, filibuster is probably gone, unless the Democrats don't have the House.
Wow. Really? You think that they will actually eliminate the filibuster if they get 52?
I think it's going to be very difficult for anybody short of Manchin and Sinema at this point to
Mark Warner is going to come out of the woodwork.
He desperately would want to avoid it, but I think it would be there would be a lot of pressure on that guy.
That would be very interesting.
Nevada, very tight. In fact, Catherine Cortez Masto is running behind Adam Laxalt by 2 percentage points there. Undecided is at 5.5%. Something happens always in Nevada. At least it happened with Harry Reid. He would look like he was in trouble, look like he was in trouble, look like he was in trouble, and then he went by 5 points on election day.
Yeah, and also I will say Laxalt's probably one of the better candidates of the cycle for Republicans. He's run in the state before. He ran closely behind Steve Sisolak for governor a few years ago. Like, he compared to like Herschel Walker or, you know, Oz or anyone of that ilk,
Vance.
Vance, he's much better. He's a much better candidate. So yeah. I would say that's almost one of the more concerning ones.
I also want to say that is just the most recent poll, and I'm not sure exactly who did that poll. And I don't know if that's registered voters or unregistered voters. Registered voters are likely. But right now, the average has masked out up by 4%. So,
well, let's hope she maintains
it's tight.
That
because of tight.
Incumbency. Yeah, but
it's tough to sense. Like, I don't know. I don't have enough information on this poll here. Arizona. Blake Masters is in trouble, and he's telegraphing it by having to literally redo his website 2 months before the election. That is really spectacular. The guy's been campaigning for a year. I'm so old, I remember when Glenn Greenwald was promoting this guy's campaign.
Fresh new
thing. Was it a year ago?
Yeah, it was.
Imagine campaigning for a year, and then you have to scrub your website of three of your major talking points: stolen election, they shall not replace us in terms of the immigrants, and abortion. You're a Republican candidate. These are the three top things that Republicans talk about.
Yeah.
Now, no word as to whether he changed his tune on Dr. Seuss or Mr. Potato Head, but these three things he's got to scrub 2 months before the election.
It's one of the most
it's extraordinary,
ungraceful pivots to a general election that we've seen in recent memory.
What's funny is I think I saw a story: McConnell and the Republicans are pulling ads out of Arizona and investing in Ohio to fortify another weak Peter Thiel candidate.
They moved
J.D.
it to Ohio and Florida. They are not raising the amount of money, and now there's outside expenditures. Peter Thiel is probably going to dump tons of money in there, but the difference is this. Is that they are pulling out, when they pulled out those money, they canceled reservations they had to buy local television. The Republican committee and the candidate get these TV ads at a discounted rate. Peter Thiel can come in. He can't necessarily coordinate with Masters, whatever that's worth. Sometimes that really cuts against it because, you know, Thiel may be a little bit more strategic, but a lot of these outfits are like, vote for Blake Masters because he's going to outlaw abortion completely. And even though Masters is going, well, not completely, we're going to have mitigating circumstances, you know. But also, they don't get the discount on the buying of the TV. Mm-hmm. And once you let go of these reservations, it goes back up on the market. Democrats can step in and buy it. Rival candidates step in, buy it. Just other people buy up the time. It's not an infinite amount of advertising time on this local television. So it's a big deal.
Same in Pennsylvania, we should say, too. I think the most amount of money in terms of ad buys that was pulled, because Oz is the most anemic of them all, potentially. Even more so than Herschel Walker. I'm just saying something.
Kelly is up by almost 8 points in the aggregate of polls in Arizona. And we can see what Masters is doing. In North Carolina, this is crazy. I mean, I don't know. I'm finding it surprising. I don't know if John from San Antonio would, but he had a tweet the other day to this effect too, which was, and this is back on August 18th, Ted Budd, Republican, Democrat Sherry Beasley, are in a statistical tie. They both have 42.3% of voter support. 12.5% of North Carolinians remain undecided. Another 2.7% support Libertarian. This is a poll of likely voters in North Carolina. And I just want to, like, you know, put one little bee in your bonnet, as it were. This year is going to be very difficult to assess who is a likely voter because of the abortion ruling. Mm. There have been, at least anecdotally, and certainly it appears, but in certain areas, there seems to be increased registration, voter registration from women following the abortion ruling. And
I think it's hard data, and particularly in Wisconsin and Pennsylvania.
And I don't know where, if it's in North Carolina, I don't know if it's across the country. We're going to see it in the context of House races, but it's going to be very difficult to predict likely voters. And my guess, and this is just a suspicion, there's really no way to know, that if I was to guess what the models look like for these polling places to determine likely voters, it probably does not factor in abortion, because I don't know how you would do that. It probably is just basing upon like 2018 or 2016, 2014 off year elections. I should say 2014 off year elections. It's probably looking, you know, based upon that on some level. So 2018, there was a lot of Democratic enthusiasm, but again, opposite party president, it's a very different dynamic. Abortion is the sort of like wild card in this. Natalie Scherr had a theory that we wouldn't see broad-based electoral activity from women across the country based upon abortion, because it's mostly going to affect low-income women. And it feels like that's not the case. And it also raises an interesting side question there too, in that in many states in this country, abortion access, and therefore the right to an abortion, has been severely curtailed for years. And it hasn't garnered it hasn't generated the electoral sort of backlash that you would imagine. But I also don't think that a lot of people knew that. And so when this, there is something to be said about the messaging that is associated with, it's not even messaging, just the reality of the Supreme Court coming down and making this edict, even if you're a woman who lives in a state, and of course it increases the opportunity for a federal ban on abortion.
The reality also for women who are maybe, you know, past the point where they would be having children or considering it, but who grew up with an understanding, or maybe Roe when they were children just came into effect. Maybe they saw the Roe as, I don't know, something new that had happened. They were born right after it. And the concept of having that right being ripped away from you, I think for a certain generation of women, is a really galvanizing moment at the polls.
And I think what the Supreme Court does is, it's not just the material impact, obviously. Although there's the, you know, again, the potential for a federal abortion ban. But it is also a statement as to women's rights. And like you said, like, this is apparently people don't feel comfortable being told that they're second class citizens.
Yeah. And it's just such simple messaging, too, in the way that, like, the Women's March broke records after Trump won, and there were all kinds of women that want to just go come out and express their disapproval of the Trump administration. And it kind of crossed ideological lines to a degree. It was more just like Democratic base plus. You could see a very similar coalition at the polls with abortion. Yep. 'Cause it's just such a simple issue for people.
Lastly, over the summer, we heard a lot of stories from Republicans saying that they're worried about J.D. Vance's campaign, even though he was way up in the polls. And abortion has impacted this, but they, apparently the Republicans, understood there was a problem with J.D. Vance.
Yeah.
And now Impact Research, it's a Democratic firm, so you got to take this with a grain of salt, shows Tim Ryan with 50% support to 47% support for Vance, 3% undecided. poll has a 3 to 5% plus minus margin of error. I mean, so and this is 800 likely general election voters. The reason why you take this with a grain of salt is a Democratic polling firm generally will have a model that favors higher Democratic turnout than a generic polling outfit. Same with the Republican polling. So I would take that with a grain of salt, but there it is clear that the trajectory that Tim Ryan is on is up, and J.D. Vance is stagnant. One thing that is also clear, Tim Ryan, regardless of the poll, has better favorable ratings than J.D. Vance. Yeah. So much of this, again, and it's a hackneyed thing to say, is going to come down to turnout. It's going to come down to turnout, because even if they have a poor favorability rating, Republicans are going to come out and they're going to vote for Republicans. The question is, how many of them are going to come out versus how many of the Democrats are going to come out?
And it's a different situation in Ohio than it is, say, in, like, I perceive Arizona and Pennsylvania as states that are trending bluer. Ohio's been trending redder for about, a decade at this point. So it's less fertile ground for someone like Tim Ryan. But as you say, one, Tim Ryan has been visible in Ohio as a representative for quite a long period of time. He's built up ties within the community there. And J.D. Vance seems to be, at this point, without a paddle. So I don't necessarily know he's just not a strong candidate. So that's the thing that benefits Tim Ryan, honestly. That's the long and short of it.
Fetterman is up in Pennsylvania. Shapiro is up in Pennsylvania. In New Hampshire, they still don't have a candidate yet. Which is inhibits someone's ability to run if they don't have the summer to run in their candidacy. I don't understand why they would do that in New Hampshire, but God bless them. And Florida. We'll see what's happening in Florida. So I don't know. We will update this every now and then. Maybe we'll get Dave Weigel on next week and give us a sense of what he's seeing on the road. All right, I'm going to take a break. Went long.
Completely Whatever.
Opposite of what I was going to do today.
Oh, did you say that you wanted to go
of
short?
Of course. Yeah. Of course. 646-257-3920 is the number. If you want to be a part of the program, you can IM the show by picking up the app at majorityapp.com. Don't forget, your support makes this show possible. Can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. Allow this show to survive and thrive. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code majority, get 10% off. Buy that Just Coffee, delicious coffee, Majority Report blend, even better. Matt, what's happening in the Matt Leckie and Media Universe?
Tonight on Left Reckoning at 8 Eastern Time on YouTube, we're having Tom Winter on to talk Montana politics and the housing problem they're having there. And also, that's it. Oh, Yellowstone, how the state feels about the show Yellowstone that everyone's going crazy about. So that's tonight. Also, leftreckoning.com, we have a store so you can get your hats and tank tops.
See you in the fun half. Three months from now, 6 months from now, 9 months from now, and I don't think it's going to be the same as it looks like in 6 months from now, and I don't know if it's necessarily going to be better 6 months from now than it is 3 months from now, but I think around 18 months out, we're going to look back and go like, wow. What? What is that going on? It's nuts. Wait a second. Hold on for a second. The Majority Report. Emma, welcome to the program.
Hey.
Matt.
Who?
What is up, everyone?
Nomi Key.
You did it.
Let's go, Brandon.
Bradley, you want to say hello?
Sorry to disappoint everyone. I'm just a random guy.
It's all the boys today.
Fundamentally false.
No, I'm sorry. Women's...
Stop talking for a second. Now let me finish.
Where is this coming from, dude?
But dude, you want to smoke this 7A?
Yes.
Hi, me? Is this me?
Yes.
Is this me?
Is it me?
It is you.
Is this me? Hello, is this me?
I think it is you. Who is you? No sound. Every single freaking day. What's on your mind?
Sports. We can discuss free markets and we can discuss capitalism.
I'm going to go start watching.
You libertarians.
They're so stupid, though.
Common sense says, of course.
Gobbledygook.
We fucking nailed him.
So what's 79 plus 21?
Challenge met.
I'm positively quivering.
I believe 96, I want to say.
857-210-3501.
One half. 3/8.
9/11, for instance.
$3,400. $1,900.
$5.43 trillion. Sold. It's a zero-sum game.
Actually, you're making me think less of
it. But let me say this.
Poop. You call it satire. Sam goes, satire.
On top of it all,
yeah.
My favorite part about you is just like every day, all day, like everything you do.
Without a doubt. Hey, buddy, we see you. All right, folks. Folks.
It's just the week being weeded out, obviously.
Yeah, sun's out, guns out. I don't know.
But you should know.
People just don't like to entertain ideas anymore.
I have a question. Who cares?
Our chat is enabled,
wow,
folks.
I love it.
I do love that.
Look, gotta jump. You gotta be quick. I gotta jump.
I'm losing it, bro.
2 o'clock, we're already late, and the guy's being a dick, so screw him. Sent to a gulag?
Outrageous.
Like, what is wrong with you?
Love you, bye.
Love you. Bye-bye.